Chapter 15. The communication sank deep into Gertrude's mind. Her nature was rather a timid one, and probably of all remedies that the White Wizard could have suggested, there was not one which would have filled her with so much aversion as this, not to speak of the immense obstacles in the way of its adoption. Casterbridge, the county town, was a dozen or 15 miles off. And though in those days, when men were executed for horse-stealing, arson, and burglary, an assize seldom passed without a hanging, it was not likely that she could get access to the body of the criminal unaided. And the fear of her husband's anger made her reluctant to breathe a word of Trendle's suggestion to him, or to anybody about him. She did nothing for months, and patiently bore her disfigurement as before. But her woman's nature, craving for renewed love, through the medium of renewed beauty, she was but 25, was ever stimulating her to try what, at any rate, could hardly do her any harm. What came by a spell will go by a spell surely, apostrophe she would say. Whenever her imagination pictured the act, she shrank in terror from the possibility of it. Then the words of the conjurer, "It will turn your blood," apostrophe, were seen to be capable of a scientific no less than a ghastly interpretation. The mastering desire returned, and urged her on again. There was at this time but one county paper, and that her husband only occasionally borrowed. But old-fashioned days had old-fashioned means, and news was extensively conveyed by word of mouth from market to market, or from fair to fair, so that, whenever such an event as an execution was about to take place, few within a radius of 20 miles were ignorant of the coming sight, and, so far as Holmstook was concerned, some enthusiasts had been known to walk all the way to Casterbridge and back in one day, solely to witness the spectacle. The next assizes were in March, and when Gertrude Lodge heard that they had been held, she inquired stealthily at the inn as to the result, as soon as she could find opportunity. She was, however, too late. The time at which the sentences were to be carried out had arrived, and to make the journey and obtain admission at such short notice required at least her husband's assistance. She dared not tell him, for as he had found by delicate experiment, that these smoldering village beliefs made him furious if mentioned, partly because he half entertained them himself. It was therefore necessary to wait for another opportunity. Her determination received a fillip from learning that two epileptic children had attended from this very village of Holmstook many years before with beneficial results, though the experiment had been strongly condemned by the neighboring clergy. April, May, June passed, and it is no overstatement to say that by the end of the last named month Gertrude well nigh longed for the death of a fellow creature. Instead of her formal prayers each night, her unconscious prayer was, "O Lord, hang some guilty or innocent person soon." ... This time she made earlier inquiries, and was altogether more systematic in her proceedings. Moreover, the season was summer, between the haymaking and the harvest, and in the leisure thus afforded him her husband had been holiday taking away from home. The assizes were in July, and she went to the inn as before. There was to be one execution, only one for arson. Her greatest problem was not how to get to Casterbridge, but what means she should adopt for obtaining admission to the jail. Though access for such purposes had formerly never been denied, the custom had fallen into desuetude. And in contemplating her possible difficulties, she was again almost driven to fall back upon her husband. But, on sounding him about the assizes, he was so uncommunicative, so more than usually cold, that she did not proceed, and decided that whatever she did she would do alone. Fortune, obdurate hitherto, showed her unexpected favor. On the Thursday before the Saturday fixed for the execution, Lodge remarked to her that he was going away from home for another day or two on business at a fair, and that he was sorry he could not take her with him. She exhibited on this occasion so much readiness to stay at home that he looked at her in surprise. time had been when she would have shown deep disappointment at the loss of such a jaunt. However, he lapsed into his usual taciturnity, and on the day named left Holmstick. It was now her turn. She at first had thought of driving, but on reflection held that driving would not do, since it would necessitate her keeping to the turnpike road, and so increase by tenfold the risk of her ghastly errand being found out. She decided to ride, and avoid the beaten track, notwithstanding that in her husband's stables there was no animal just at present which by any stretch of imagination could be considered a lady's mount, in spite of his promise before marriage, to always keep a mare for her. He had, however, many cart horses, fine ones of their kind, and among the rest, was a serviceable creature, an equine Amazon, with a back as broad as a sofa, on which Gertrude had occasionally taken an airing when unwell. This horse she chose. On Friday afternoon one of the men brought it round. She was dressed, and before going down looked at her shriveled arm. Ah! Apostrophe, she said to it, if it had not been for you this terrible ordeal would have been saved me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, when strapping up the bundle in which he carried a few articles of clothing, she took occasion to say to the servant, I take these in case I should not get back tonight from the person I am going to visit. Don't be alarmed, if I am not in by 10, and close up the house as usual. I shall be at home tomorrow for certain. Apostrophe, she meant then, to privately tell her husband. The deed accomplished was not like the deed projected. He would almost certainly forgive her. And then the pretty palpitating Gertrude Lodge went from her husband's homestead. But though her goal was Casterbridge, she did not take the direct route thither through Stickleford. Her cunning course at first was in precisely the opposite direction. As soon as she was out of sight, however, she turned to the left, by a road which led into Egdon, and on entering the heath wheeled round, and set out in the true course, due westerly. A more private way down the county could not be imagined, and as to direction, as he had merely to keep her horse's head to a point a little to the right of the sun. She knew that she would light upon a furze cutter or cottager of some sort from time to time, from whom she might correct her bearing. Though the date was comparatively recent, Egdon was much less fragmentary in character than now. The attempts successful and otherwise at cultivation on the lower slopes, which intrude and break up the original heath into small detached heaths, had not been carried far. Enclosure acts had not taken effect, and the banks and fences which now exclude the cattle of those villagers who formerly enjoyed rights of commonage thereon, and the carts of those who had turbary privileges which kept them in firing all the year round, were not erected. Gertrude, therefore, rode along with no other obstacles than the prickly furze bushes, the mats of heather, the white watercourses, and the natural steeps and declivities of the ground. Her horse was sure, if heavy-footed and slow, and though a draft animal, was easy-paced. Had it been otherwise, she was not a woman who could have ventured to ride over such a bit of country with a half-dead arm. It was therefore nearly 8 o'clock, when she drew rein, to breathe the mare on the last outlying high point of heathland towards Casterbridge, previous to leaving Egdon for the cultivated valleys. She halted before a pool called Rushy Pond, flanked by the ends of two hedges. A railing ran through the center of the pond, dividing it in half. Over the railing she saw the low green country, over the green trees the roofs of the town, over the roofs a white flat facade, denoting the entrance to the county jail. On the roof of this front specks were moving about. They seemed to be workmen erecting something. Her flesh crept. She descended slowly, and was soon amid cornfields and pastures. In another half hour, when it was almost dusk, Gertrude reached the White Hart, the first inn of the town on that side. Little surprise was excited by her arrival. Farmers' wives rode on horseback then more than they do now, though, for that matter, Mrs. Lodge was not imagined to be a wife at all. The innkeeper supposed her some harum-scarum young woman who had come to attend hang fair next day. Neither her husband nor herself ever dealt in Casterbridge Market, so that she was unknown. While dismounting, she beheld a crowd of boys standing at the door of a harness maker's shop just above the inn, looking inside it with deep interest. What is going on there? ? She asked of the ostler. Making the rope for tomorrow. ? She throbbed responsively, and contracted her arm. 'Tis sold by the inch afterwards. ? The man continued. I could get you a bit, miss, for nothing, if you'd like. ? He hastily repudiated any such wish, all the more from a curious creeping feeling that the condemned wretch's destiny was becoming interwoven with her own, and having engaged a room for the night, sat down to think. Up to this time he had formed but the vaguest notions about her means of obtaining access to the prison. The words of the cunning man returned to her mind. He had implied that she should use her beauty, impaired though it was, as a pass key. In her inexperience she knew little about jail functionaries, as he had heard of a high sheriff and an under-sheriff, but dimly only. She knew, however, that there must be a hangman, and to the hangman she determined to apply. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.